The Weagle Sunday, Its History and Character, Author's Preface. Several years ago, the present writer published, through Wynne and Company, of Jersey City, a treatise on the law of Sunday. The work was mainly technical and intended for the use of the legal profession. The present volume is the result of friendly suggestions that a popular essay on the same subject would be a timely contribution to the cause of religious equality. An endeavor is here made to embrace every aspect of the question and to urge every objection to Sunday laws, as well as to refute every argument by which they have been or may conceivably be defended. The book is dedicated to the members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It may be well to observe that the author is not himself of that communion. He is simply one who has learned, through intercourse with its leading men, as well as with its rank and file, to admire and esteem them all most highly. Indeed, it seems impossible that any candid person should ponder the character and history of this remarkable people without being penetrated with admiration for the exceeding purity and gentleness of their lives, and being struck by the extraordinary analogy which they present, both in this regard and in their religious experiences, to the early Christian martyrs. For the Seventh-day Adventists keep the Sabbath as their weekly sacred day, and they believe that they are divinely commanded to work on the other 6 days of the week, and they maintain that, as American citizens, they are of right entitled to work when and where they please, so long as their work does not physically disturb others, and by no means because they work on Sunday, but solely and simply because they hold it to be their duty and assert it to be their right so to do, they are, to the infinite shame of Tennessee and Maryland and other states, and to the everlasting disgrace of this alleged free country and this 19th century of alleged enlightenment, persecuted by mobs, as well as under the forms of law. Their meeting places are destroyed, their preachers are stoned and threatened with revolvers, and their members are cast into jail according to the provisions of that unspeakable infamy of the Cromwellian Church Militant, whereby Sunday idleness has been made a civil duty.
Will the Seventh-day Adventists make history as their prototypes did of old? Will their persistent and unhesitating choice between Diana and Christ profitably compel the attention of those who lead public opinion and mold it into laws to the anomaly of the existence in free America of any statute which is simply the embodiment of a religious dogma and which can be used by one sect to persecute another? So that there shall at last arise in every state some prophet bold enough to propose and strong enough to carry the repeal of the Sunday law? And meantime, will the patient endurance, the sweet reasonableness, the martyr spirit of those who, when they are reviled, revile not again, so prevail against the animosity of their neighbors that very shame shall extinguish the ardor of Christian mobs and public officials? And the Sunday laws, though not yet repealed, shall be permitted to lapse into innocuous desuetude? Well, let us hope for each and all of these things. It is a great and good service which the Seventh-day Adventists have done to our country and generation in exposing the hollowness of the pretense that religious equality exists among us and that we have abolished the union of church and state, in demonstrating that the spirit of religious persecution is still strong and that a state religion is still recognized in America. But this does not exhaust the debt we owe to these people.
Their church has given birth to an organization which, by reason of the magnificence of its purpose and the unwavering consistency of its methods, challenges the admiration and commands the reverence of every right-thinking man. That organization is called the International Religious Liberty Association. Its purpose is, in the name of Christ, to effect the total separation of the Christian church everywhere from the state. Although this total separation was the very cornerstone of the Master's teaching, it is a melancholy fact that his followers availed themselves of the very first opportunity they found to unite with the civil power and to possess themselves of that sword which Peter was commanded to put up again into his place. And from the days of Constantine to this day, no Christian denomination has ever been willing to go without the assistance of the police power when it could be had. Every new sect which has arisen has been keenly alive to the dangers, nay, the blasphemy, of a union between the state and any other sect. But every sect has considered it part of the divine purpose that there should be a union between the state and itself. Whatever has been effected in the direction of undoing the evil work done by Constantine and the bishops of 313, 325, and secularizing government, has been effected through the influence and the labors of infidels, agnostics, and the like. And now comes the International Religious Liberty Association, composed in part, but by no means altogether, of Seventh-day Adventists, and proposes to take from infidels and agnostics the glory and honor of rendering this great service to mankind. It declares that these men are fighting with weapons taken from the Master's camp after they were cast aside in scorn by his unworthy followers, though he expressly warned them that his cause could be won with none others. It asserts that he himself came to tell men that true religion could not utilize physical force and therefore could never come into alliance with the state, which is simply the embodiment of the physical force of the community. That true religion could not persecute, and that no church could desire or utilize a union with the state for any other purpose than the purpose of persecution.
If it be melancholy to reflect that during so many centuries it has been left to non-Christians to defend and enforce by slow degrees and still imperfectly these simple Christian truths, while professed Christians have uniformly denied them in theory and defied them in practice, surely it is a great and glorious thing to know that we have among us now a body of earnest and consistent men, determined at least that the Master shall no longer be misrepresented and that his doctrines shall no longer be used by his enemies to discredit him before the people and to keep him out of his kingdom, the hearts and minds of men. The Seventh-day Adventist Church and the International Religious Liberty Association cannot now grow too fast nor wax too strong for the good of the race, and especially of these United States, the one representing a pure and beautiful religion, whose reality and truth are best attested by its effective work on character and conduct. The other, at once the embodiment of the Christian and American ideal, standing for the total separation from the state of every church, because such separation is a fundamental and vital principle of American politics, and for the total separation from the state of every church calling itself Christian, for the additional reason that, unless so separated, it is falsely and blasphemously so calling itself. This is an humble attempt to aid in the work of the International Religious Liberty Association, JTR.